Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Gold Clause case when we come back. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history, and surveillance and electronic record-keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American. Now, that's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. Closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us, and a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems. These systems contained 10,799 categories of information about these same New York residents, and every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records on those New York citizens. Now, information about you and about me is gained from 63 sources. This information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and a very logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how your government, how your bank, how your insurance company, how business and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is this information being stored? How is it being retrieved? And what do they want it for? Well, knowing how this information is gathered, what information is being stored, what information you want to keep personal and private, actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call us here at the law school. The number's 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. And let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and just as private as you want to be. Now, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request. Now, remember again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. The Gold Clause case. You hear me talk from time to time about the merits of gold. Our founding fathers put a clause in our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10. For most of us today, it's an obscure clause that has no meaning. It's just 17 words. It was engineered by George Mason at the Constitutional Convention. And the founding fathers adopted it because they had gone through a period of inflation and monetary economic collapse, the same kind of monetary economic collapse that we're about to go through again in our lifetimes. Right now, we have already entered it. It began in August of 2007. And so when we look back in history, like we did at the Great Depression of the 1930s, it began in October. I think it was October the 26th, 1929, with the collapse of the stock market. But stock market collapses are not the cause of depressions. It's a symptom. And the economic bubble that broke in August, the economic bubble in housing that has just turned turtle on us will be marked as August 2007. That's August of 2007 as the beginning point of this new Great Depression. Now, in the last depression, it took 3.5 years to reach bottom. So, you know, from day to day, week to week, month to month, year to year, it's a slow, long, drawn-out, agonizing process. Now, depressions have a cause, and the cause of depressions is, mark this down now so that you understand it, you'll remember it, paper money. It's nothing more, nothing less. Paper money. And that's because paper money causes bubbles. Gold doesn't. Gold is put into circulation by labor. Labor is what we all work for. We all work for labor. That's the purpose of getting up in the morning. You're out in the marketplace selling your labor, and somebody out there wants to buy it at some price. We don't know what the price is, maybe $1 an hour, $1 a day. And so, when God designed this process way, way back, you know, in the Garden of Eden, he put a bimetal dual monetary system in operation. The real price of gold is not measured in dollars. It's measured in ounces of silver. And the price of silver isn't measured in dollars, it's measured in ounces of gold. And there are 16 ounces of silver in the Earth's crust for every ounce of gold, and so the correct price for gold and silver is 16 ounces of gold for 1 ounce, 16 ounces of silver for 1 ounce of gold, and 1 ounce of gold equals 16 ounces of silver. Dollars don't have anything to do with it any more than marks, escudos, or Russian rubles. And when you follow that biblical Ten Commandment formula, you have wealth and prosperity. It's not all of it, because there's 15 economic laws. That's one of the 15 economic laws, but that's a part of it. And when you deviate from that, then you have a symptom develop. Something comes up, and it causes a problem. And that's where we're at today. Something has come up, and it's caused a problem. And one of the symptoms that we're going through right now is rapidly rising prices. Price of gasoline has risen from $2 to $4 a gallon over the past year. Price of corn has gone up from about $2 a bushel to $8 a bushel, or is about to shortly. And so you're sitting out there saying, well, I just don't understand what causes this. Say, well, pay attention now. I'm going to show you what causes this. Now, if everybody knew and understood what the cause and effect relationship was, it would be a relatively easy matter to solve the problem. Now, for those that created this problem, they don't want a solution. People who cause depressions don't want solutions to depressions because they make money off of them. So when there's a depression, there's people that get filthy rich at the expense of everybody else. When there's boom times, there's people that get filthy rich at the expense of everybody else. And so these few people that get rich at the expense of everybody else are what we call the Illuminati, the elitists, the insiders. And these people are bankers, industrial and corporate leaders, politicians. 5% of the people are extroverts. And 95% of the people are introverts. And the objective here is to get 95% of the people to support themselves and the 5% that are extroverts, because the 5% who are the extroverts don't want to work. Bill Gates and Warren Buffett do not want to go out and dig ditches and do something constructive. What they want to do is to buy, sell, and trade in the marketplace and make money. Politicians don't want to work. They want to stand up and pontificate, talk a lot, do nothing, and get paid a bunch of money and then retire in ease on your expense account. It's been going on that way for thousands of years, so don't think that anything new is coming up or that I'm giving you some new revelation. Hell, it's been old news for a long time. But that's the way that goes. So most of us, it's you and me and everybody else, are the introverts supporting the extroverts. And in the Bible, they're called the princes of Israel. And these princes, they come to us and they pontificate and they tell us about all this Mr. Rogers great wonderland out here, and how if we just follow them, you know, they're going to deliver to us this utopia, this nirvana. See? Politicians do that every 4 years here in the United States. They promise, you follow me and I'll deliver you a chicken in every pot and a car in every garage. And we believe that crap and we follow after it. Now, it puts a chicken in every pot and a car in every garage for every banker. It doesn't do that for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife out here driving trucks and keeping house and making beds down at the Motel 6. And it's not designed for those people. But there is a system that was designed for those people, and it's what the Gold Clause was put into our Constitution for. See, our founding fathers followed that Ten Commandments principle that says, you shall not have in your bag an unjust weight or balance. So as I've mentioned before, there's two world models to follow. It's the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, which we follow today, and produces the problems that we see. It always has produced the same problems over the last 5,000 years. Nothing's changed. It's just that you and I can't learn from history, and we can't learn from history because we don't learn history in our public schools. They teach us Mr. Rogers and Sesame Street and Barney. And there's no evil there. There's no good and evil. And you can't make a distinction between good and evil. There's only good. You do this and everything's going to come out fine. Now, that's not true. That's not the way the real world works. But that's what we've been told and that's what we've been taught. That's what we believe and that's what we follow and practice. And that's why you will never see a solution to the problem, because the people that are in control of the problem are also in control of the solution. That's the fox guarding the hen house. And as long as they're in control of your education, you're going to believe what your educators, what your leaders, what your princes tell you. You don't have any other basis to weigh or measure the information. All right, so our founding fathers followed the Ten Commandment formula, or the Ten Commandment principle, and they put into our Constitution these 17 words. It says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. And if we followed that, it would eliminate usury and interest. It would eliminate monopolies. You wouldn't have the Ford Motor Company or General Motors. It wouldn't be here. And most of you are sitting there saying, oh my God, how would the world work without General Motors and Ford? Very well, thank you. For the first 4,000 years, it worked very nicely without GM and Ford. And with GM and Ford, it hasn't worked nearly as well since. Now, corporations are creatures of the state. They come from our princes and politicians. Corporations do not come from the Bible, the Ten Commandments, or Moses at Mount Sinai. But they're really just the tip of the iceberg. And a case was decided back in 1995, I believe it was. Let's see if I got a date here. 1996. It was filed on August the 14th, 1996. And it's in the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. It's a Gold Clause case, and it deals with a bank and an insurance company. And the Gold Clause that was inserted into the original lease of 1917. And then, of course, how does that affect us today? Now, you hear me talk about gold from time to time. I use gold. I don't know if you understand this or not, but gold is traded on the London Metals Exchange at the rate of $10 billion a day. As a commodity, gold is the number one commodity in the world today. Now, it might not be in your world, driving truck for Walmart, but gold is the single most valuable commodity being traded in the marketplace today. It always has been throughout history. It is today and will continue to be in the future. Whether you're a part of it or not, it's irrelevant. I don't care if you ever get an ounce of gold. But for those of us that deal in gold and silver, we don't pay income tax. Let me repeat that. People that deal in gold and silver don't pay income tax. And that's because gold and silver are property, and property is the holy grail of law. At least it is in Anglo-Saxon administration until our Constitution is suspended. Now, that's coming. You can expect martial law, the suspension of our Constitution, and the imposition of a dictatorship here in America shortly. It's always been the rule of paper money, and it has been in the past, and there's no reason to believe that it isn't going to be imposed upon us in the future. The dictatorship doesn't come because some wicked evil guy comes along and imposes it. It comes along because you and I ratify and support it and practice it. And as long as you practice paper money, write checks, and use credit cards, you can ensure a dictatorship will ultimately follow in the wake of these unjust weights and balances. It always has in the past, it is today everywhere else in the world, and it will be here shortly. So might as well get ready for it and prepare for it and expect to profit or lose from it. Now here's the way this case comes down. Back in 1917, this case involves a gold clause contained in a 99-year commercial property lease that was originally executed in 1917. Now, the American Life and Casualty Insurance Company is the current lessee, having acquired the leasehold interest in 1990. The lessors, successors in interest to the original lessor, brought this contract action against American Life after it refused to pay its monthly rent installments in gold coin, as specified in the original lease. The district court granted summary judgment in favor of American Life on the basis that the gold clause had been erased from the 1917 lease by a 1933 act of Congress. The Eighth Circuit says we reverse and remand. What that says then in legalese is that the district court erred in their conclusion that Congress had the power to erase that gold clause back in 1933 and affect a property right and affect the terms and conditions of that contract. Now, that's what the Eighth Circuit came to the conclusion of, and the case ultimately went to the Supreme Court, and they upheld the Eighth Circuit. And so I come along and I teach my students right out of this case, and I say, okay, now, boys and girls, let's take a look at gold and silver. And let's see whether or not there are any modern cases, any up-to-date cases on gold and silver that we can use here for our benefit. On June 27, 1917, John Trostel entered into a lease agreement with Mollis and Jacob Joseph for commercial property in Des Moines, Iowa. The second paragraph of the lease set the amount of annual rent at $12,000 for the first 5 years of the lease, $15,000 for the next 49 years, and $18,000 for the remaining 45 years. Now, that's important, so let's jot that down in our notes. These people enter into a lease agreement for 99 years. And the lease agreement calls for $12,000 a year. Now, $12,000 a year back in those early days is $20 an ounce for gold. So every $100, that's 120 hundredths, that's 120 times 5 ounces, or 5 zeros a zero, 10, 5, 600 ounces of gold a year. Now here's what that means. 600 ounces of gold in 1917 was equal to $600 worth of Federal Reserve notes. You could take a $20 Federal Reserve note into the bank, put it on the counter, and walk out with a $20 Double Eagle. Or you could walk into the bank with a $20 Double Eagle and walk out with a $20 bill. They were fully convertible at that value. But after 1935, the price of gold jumped to $35 an ounce, and currently it's at about $900 an ounce. So if we convert that $12,000 a year, that 600 ounces of gold, into today's money. Now, remember, this lease runs from 1917 to 2017. As I speak, this is 2008. It's got 9 more years to run. And there's a controversy now over the payment of this gold, because when this lease was entered into by the insurance company and the Hawkeye Bank in 1990, no mention of gold was made in the lease. And this illustrates another important part of what we call an adhesion contract. An adhesion contract is a contract in which you may not know the terms and conditions. And this insurance company did not know the terms and conditions of the lease. They could have known. They should have known. I mean, after all, where were their lawyers? Where was the title insurance company? who failed to go back in the abstract and look up the original lease and the terms and conditions and research it out when they were researching the title? Huh? Where were these people? Now, you know, if you're a waitress, you know, working down at Barney's Beanery, you know, I could understand you not doing the title search, but where in the hell was the bank's legal department? Where was the insurance company's legal department? All right, so now we understand that there's a lot of money involved here because over the years, inflation has come into the program. And it's good, you know, for the insurance company to be leasing this property at $12,000, $18,000 a year in 1990, as opposed to leasing it for what it ought to be leasing for in the value of 1917 $20 double eagles. It was good for the insurance company. Then when this lease came up, and Congress reenacted gold as legal tender in the United States, they did this in 1985. 1986, they put it into operation. It changed things. And it also provided that at the option of the lessor, all payments under this lease shall be made in gold coin of the United States of America, of or equal to the present standard of weight and fineness. In a separate paragraph, 90 days written notice was required as a condition precedent to the right of the lessor to demand payment in gold. Prior to the Depression era, gold clauses such as this were often included in long-term rental agreements as a method of price indexing to protect the lessor from the effects of inflation. Now, as part of the lease, the Josephs agreed to construct a building on the property that was at least 8 stories in height. The lease gave the lessees the right to transfer or assign their interest in the lease, and provided that once the building was completed, a proper assignment would relieve them of any further personal liability under the lease. A 14-story building was completed on the property in 1931 and is now known as the Des Moines Building. The lease was amended in writing 4 times. By supplemental agreements in 1921, 1927, and 1930, and by amendment in 1959, it was also supplemented by a written agency agreement dated September 24, 1959. Now, among other things, the amendments related to the building construction deadline, the rent increases, and the appointment of an agent for the collection and receipt of the rent. And each of these amendments was recorded. None of these modifications referred to the gold clause in the original lease. In 1933, Congress passed legislation which allocated all gold clauses. That's bad writing there. It's not allocated, it's terminated all gold clauses. And a joint resolution of Congress, that's called House Joint Resolution 192. Remember, a few days ago we talked about that. A joint resolution of Congress declared gold clauses to be against public policy and provided that dollar for dollar payments in United States currency would discharge any obligation. Well, now, House Joint Resolution 192, dated June 5, 1933, was codified as amended at 31 U.S.C. 5118D2. And this was one of a series of measures taken to stabilize the value of United States currency, at least during that time. Now, during that same time period, private ownership of gold was banned and the dollar was devalued. From the Gold Clause cases to the Gold Commission, a half century of American monetary law, you can read about in the 50th edition of the Chicago Law Review, volume 504, and it was published in 1983. Subsequently, in 1975, Congress repealed the ban on private ownership of gold, and in 1977, Congress passed an amendment to the 1933 Gold Clause statute. That amendment provided that the provision of the 1933 statute would not apply to obligations issued after October the 27th, 1977. That was the Act of October the 28th, 1977, cited at Public Law Number 95-147. In other words, as of October 28th, 1977, it was once again legal to contract for payment in gold coin. So from 1933 to 1977, contracting in gold was prohibited as being against public policy. Whether that was constitutional or not, we don't know. Nobody ever tested it. So it's a moot issue because after October of 1977, it was repealed, and so now it becomes moot, as we say in law. The interest in the Des Moines building lease has been transferred numerous times. The three of the transfers are considered relevant by the parties. On May 7th, 1969, State Automobile and Casualty Underwriters, that State Auto, acquired the leasehold estate pursuant to a warranty assignment and assumption. And in this document, the State Auto Company agreed to be bound by all of the terms and conditions of the 1917 lease as amended by specific written and recorded amendments. The parties agreed that this transfer of interest was a novation that created a valid contract between the lessors and State Auto, and that released the lessee from any obligation, the prior, I guess, lessee. Now, on December the 20th, 1985, the State Auto transferred the leasehold, their interest, to the Statesman Group, Incorporated, which later transferred it to the American Life on August 15, 1990. The 1985 and 1990 transfers were each accomplished pursuant to a recorded warranty assignment and assumption, similar to that used in the 1969 transaction. The 1990 warranty agreement, which is the basis of the current lease, specifically incorporated the terms of the 1917 lease, and it provided that Statesman, quote, does hereby sell, transfer, assign, and set over unto American Life the leasehold estate, more particularly described in that certain lease dated June 27, 1917, and recorded in the office of the Recorder of Polk County, Iowa, on April the 25th, 1923, in Book 870, page 497, wherein Joseph and Jacob Joseph are the lessees, as amended by supplemental agreement dated May 6, 1921, recorded in the office of the said county recorder on April 25th, 1923. Now, Statesman also warranted that the lease has not been canceled, surrendered, or modified except pursuant to those supplements above specified, and that the said lease is in full force and effect, and that the document also provided that American Life, as the grantee, hereby accepts, assumes, and agrees to be bound by all of the lease, all of the terms and conditions to be kept, observed, and performed by the lessee in said lease as amended above, described from April, from the date August 1st, 1990 forward. Now, it's important to know that the holy grail of Anglo-Saxon administration is property and property rights. Boys and girls, let me emphasize that. If you want to know where the bottom line in law, in the common law, in the Mosaic law, in Anglo-Saxon administration, if you want to know what that is, it's property. And it's founded upon this clause in the Ten Commandments that says, thou shalt not steal. Those four words, thou shalt not steal, are the basis of personal property rights. Without it, you can't own private property. And that's what's been abrogated here in America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Western Europe. All of the Anglo-Saxon countries have repudiated the Ten Commandments and adopted the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, and you adopted plank number one, which calls for the abolition of all right to property. Thou shalt not steal establishes property and property rights, and the first plank to the Communist Manifesto abrogates your right to property. That's why I told you the other day, I said, hell, you don't even own your children.
You don't own your car. You don't own your house. You people have become penniless, property-less, serfs, and holders in due course, but not owners of property. Now, that's a tragic state to wake up and find yourself in, boys and girls, but you know you did it to yourself. Or as I tell my students, well, we did it to ourselves. You know, I have to put myself into the same boat. I was a practicing communist until I was 37. And then one day it was explained to me, and I pointed that out when A.J. Porth said, let me explain checks to you, Mr. Gordon. So the other day I said, well, let me explain checks to you, boys and girls. So now let's take this a step beyond checks. And let's go to gold itself and find out how does gold fit with the first plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for the abolition of your right to property. And let's take a look at where we were when we had a right to property under Thou Shalt Not Steal. It's a very important distinction. But before we go any further, let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that the authors and publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. But if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the Gold Clause case. It's a case that's entitled here, if I can give you the... You can find this in Find Law for legal professionals if you're online. See if I can give you a case number here. It's caselaw.lp.findlaw.co. And all I've got here is a case entry number. It's number 95-3666 in the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals in Kansas City. But if you'll go to Find Law, you can find this case. And the case itself is entitled. Let's see if I can give you the title here. It's the Norwest Bank, Fort Collins. They're called the Trustee Appellant. versus American Life and Casualty Insurance Company defendant appealee. And it's the Hawkeye Bank of Des Moines appeal from the United States District Court for the Southern District of Iowa. You could get this case in its entirety from the United States District Court for the Southern District of Iowa. And then you can get that off of Lexis or Nexus as an illustration. All right, it's a published case. It's fairly recent. It's the Doctrine of Law and Gold here in the United States. Now let me flip back over here. I lost my place now. Flip back over. Here's my arrow. In a letter dated December the 27th, 1993, an attorney for the lessors demanded payment of the rental obligation from American Life and Gold Coin pursuant to paragraph 2 of the 1917 lease. And on March 25th, 1994, American Life delivered a cashier's check in the amount of $515,583.33 to the agent, along with a letter explaining that it represented the total rental obligation for the remaining lease term through the year 2016. Now, the letter claimed that the payment to the agent constituted a complete discharge of all rent owing. Notice the word discharge here, boys and girls. Remember House Joint Resolution 192. And discharge and payment. Remember we talked about that? They argued now is a complete discharge. Now, this is a good faith offer on the part of the insurance company. Although the 1917 lease required that rent be paid monthly in advance, American Life claims that requirement is superseded by language in the 1959 amendment related to the appointment of an agent for rent collection. Now, the lessor's attorney instructed the agent to hold the check for a week, after which he advised that the tender had been refused, and then instructed the agent to return the check to American Life. And American Life has refused to accept the check back, and no rent has exchanged hands since that time. So this is what creates the constitutional confrontation. It's the refusal to accept the tender offer. And that's what a tender is. A tender is a part of a contract. A contract has four elements. It's an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. Now, these people have an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration, and the time limit is 99 years. 99 years. And they're going to argue now as we proceed through the case that, hey, wait a minute, things have changed over here, and this is pretty much what we learn on Barney and then Sesame Street. You know, things change, and let's all be friends, and everything comes out right in the end, and there's never any controversies. But that's not where the real world is. And out in the real world, there are controversies that come up that need to be adjudicated. And so we use that big word, boys and girls. Can you say adjudicated? It has to be settled. Controversies come up. We have to settle these. Now, the lessors filed this case against American Life on July 29, 1994, claiming that it had breached the lease contract by failing to make payments in monthly installments and in gold coin. They believe that the 1990 transfer of the leasehold interest to American Life was a new obligation entered into after the 1977 amendment, which once again permitted requirements of payment in gold coin. And in their view, the gold clause in the 1917 lease was reinstated by the terms of the 1990 warranty agreement. And American Life argued that the gold clause was not part of the current lease, and that its prepayment of rent for the remainder of the lease term satisfied its rental obligation. Now, you can see from the insurance company's point of view, they'd rather pay $515,000 cash up front because they're paying it off in cheap $12,000 a month inflated rental terms. Now, that's good business on their part. We can't argue that, you know, these people aren't thinking, can't count. The Hawkeye Bank on the other side of the coin here, they're sitting there saying, hey, wait a minute now. Had we stuck with the original lease agreement, and if Congress hadn't intervened with House Joint Resolution 192, and if the Federal Reserve hadn't been creating all this inflation out here, we would have been collecting $12,000, $15,000, and $18,000 a year in $20 gold coins, which is worth a hell of a lot more than this worthless fiat paper currency, which, by the way, when we compare today's money with that of 1930, when this lease was entered into, you've only got 2% of your purchasing power left. So here's the insurance company paying 2 cents on the dollar in real terms. Hell of a deal for them, bad deal for the owners of the building. Well, the district court granted summary judgment for the insurance company American Life and dismissed the action. The court held that even if a new obligation had been created in 1990, the gold clause could not have been incorporated in it by reference to the terms of the 1917 lease, because the 1933 Act had rendered that clause void and erased it from the 1917 lease. So the federal district court judge agreed with the insurance company and said, hell, House Joint Resolution 192 is law, and it superseded the lease. Therefore, Congress can change the terms and conditions of a lease made in 1917. The judge agreed with the insurance company. Now, the lessors appealed. They said, no, we disagree with this federal judge, arguing that the gold clause had not been erased from the 1917 lease, that it was revived by what they referred to as a novation in 1990. And that American Life breached the lease by refusing to pay in gold coin and by failing to make rental payments in monthly installments. American Life responds that the gold clause was erased from the original lease by the Act of Congress. And it also claims that the gold clause was severed from the lease by a novation in 1969. And that the current lease between the lessors and American Life does not contain a gold clause because the 1990 transfer was not a novation, and that its repayment or prepayment of rent for the remainder of the 99-year term satisfied its rental obligation. And the insurance company alternatively argues that if the gold clause is enforceable, the amount due should be based on the value of gold in 1990 rather than in 1917. Boy, we got a number of constitutional issues to decide here. And this is what appellate courts do. They create policy. They settle conflicts like this. And they settle it according to our Constitution. It's not popular. And as a matter of fact, we really don't care what the popular opinion calls for. We don't care about Barney, Mr. Rogers, or Sesame Street and Big Bird. Or what their view of right and wrong is. It's based upon the view of Anglo-Saxon administration as it's been interpreted and has been carried out since Moses brought it down off the mountain to us. And that's called property and property rights. Based upon real property, which is gold coin, rather than Mr. Rogers' paper called Federal Reserve Notes. Now, the issue that we must determine is whether the current obligations between the parties include the gold clause contained in paragraph 2 of the 1917 lease. That's issue number 1. American Life's obligations under the lease were created by the 1990 warranty agreement between it and Statesman. And on its face, the warranty agreement incorporates all of the terms of the 1917 lease. That lease included the gold clause, which was not specifically mentioned in 1990 as being relevant or not. So if the 1990 transfer of interest created a new obligation between the lessors and American Life, it could legally contain a gold clause because it took place after the time that gold clauses were prohibited. That is, October of 1977. Now, the gold clauses in a 99-year lease entered into in 1929, revived by the post-1977 novation of contract, the 1990 transfer of interest would create such a new obligation that if it constituted a novation of the lease, Now, American Life states in its briefs that the 1990 transaction was not an ovation, but it does not dispute that a valid new obligation was formed. Instead, it argues that the new obligation did not contain a goal clause. Iowa law describes a novation as a substituted contract that includes, as a party, one who was neither the obligor nor the obligee of the original duty. So if you were wondering what is a novation is an assumed lease, an assumed contract. There's another word for it. It's called an adhesion contract. And an adhesion contract is a contract that you don't know anything about. You've never seen it? Don't know anything about it. That's a novation. You have assumed the liabilities pursuant to a document, a contract, a lease, that you've never read. Boys and girls, welcome to reality here. You know, say goodbye to Mr. Rogers and welcome to reality. You know, every time your Congress meets, every time your legislature meets, they enact laws that you people don't know anything about. And as citizens, you're obligated to. In fact, there's 2.5 million of these laws here in the United States today. 2.5 million laws that I would venture a guess and say that the average Joe Sixpack American could not recite or identify 50. So do you people know the law of the United States? Hell, you haven't even got a start. You're not even stepping on the first rung of the ladder. And yet you're obligated to all of these laws, rules, and regulations. And oftentimes these laws are written in obfuscated terminologies, using words like novation that, hell, you and I never heard of in our lifetimes. And hell, half of us couldn't even find in the dictionary because we went to public schools and we can't read and we can't spell. So we couldn't even look it up. Now compare us to a black slave on a plantation who's illiterate in 1817 and tell us that we're educated, all you boys and girls out there with your letters after your names and your voter's registration. Now tell me you're educated, would you? Send me a letter. Tell me how well educated you are. Hell, here's a case that comes down, and the lawyers that are going into the courts here, arguing two sides of the issue. They're confused. They're the professionals, and they're walking in here to the court, and they're saying, hey, listen, we're not quite sure we understand where this deal is going to come down. We need a policy decision, so that's why you go into appeal, or you go into the appellate court. It's to get a policy decision. Now remember, boys and girls, you've heard me say this. I said, the power in America lies in our courts, not in our politics. I don't give a damn what Ted Kennedy does. I'm wasting my time going out here and voting for some fool that says he's got the competence to lead 300 million people. Anybody that believes that he has the ability to lead 300 million people as a mere mortal without God Almighty directing him has his head right square up the middle of his rectal region. Moses was leading 3.5 million people with God and had a hell of a time doing it. And you mean to tell me that you're going to elect somebody in this upcoming election going to lead 10 times that many? 100 times that many? 100 times that many people and do it without God. Going to do it with the help of the Democratic Party and the Congress? Huh? So I ask every once in a while, have we taken a leave of our senses here? Now, when we deal with law, we deal with reality. Now, this is the way this game has to be played, not because I say so, but because this is what the courts tell us. And the courts are the people that hold the power. These are the people that tell you that the Congressional Act fails, that the President's decision's unlawful. Now, the President's been running that Guantanamo outfit down there, you know, for 7 years, hasn't he, or 6 years, or something like that. And the Supreme Court the other day said, hey, Bush, you got your head up the wrong end again. It's illegal. Go back to square one, redo it. But the courts never get involved in this for years after the fact. And why is it? Nobody brought the issue up. But when somebody did bring the issue up and they said, hey, do these Guantanamo people down here have any rights? And the answer is, yeah, they do. So the courts only answer questions. They don't make policy. So when I hear people saying, well, that's judicial activism, why, those fools, they either know better and they're lying to you or they don't understand the process. There isn't any judicial activism coming out of here. This is a construction of what is. This is where reality is. It may run against the popular will of the people. You may not agree with it. Got a guy in here the other day said, well, I'm in favor of one man and one vote. Well, that may be true, but that isn't the way presidents in this country are selected. We don't select them by one man, one vote. And our founding fathers didn't create that one man, one vote ideology either. And that's a communist ideology, and I'm sure that 300 million people subscribe to it and believe in it, as well as Barney, Mr. Rogers, and Big Bird. But that doesn't mean that that's where reality is located. All right, now getting back here to gold. In this case, there is no question that a valid previous lease obligation existed between statesmen and the lessors, and that all parties agreed to a new contract, and that the obligations of the statesmen were extinguished, and that a valid lease was created between the lessors and American Life. American Life asserts that there was no novation as to the gold clause itself because the parties did not intend to incorporate it into the new lease. And that argument involves how to interpret the law as it relates to this case and this contract, not whether a novation took place. American Life does not suggest that the 1990 transaction was anything other than a novation. Now, we conclude that under Iowa law, the 1990 transfer of interest was, in fact, a novation, and that the parties are and were legally free to incorporate a gold clause into that lease agreement at that time if they so desired. That does not end the inquiry, however, because the parties did not explicitly mention gold. They did not specifically identify each lease term. Rather, the 1990 warranty agreement simply incorporated all of the terms and conditions in the 1917 agreement. And that lease had a gold clause in it. Now, can you understand how that works, boys and girls? Way back in 1917, some people wrote up an agreement. In 1990, some new people that weren't even alive when that original agreement was made, made an agreement, and they agreed to incorporate the terms and agreements of the 1917 contract. Evidently, nobody read the 1917 contract. I guess. I don't know. If I'd have read the 1917 contract in 1990, I would have said, gee, let me see. Hasn't gold been reestablished here in the United States? Maybe we better take a look at the gold statutes here in Title 31. What's the state of the law today? Now, Congress has the power to change these laws, and they did in 1933. I don't think they had the power to do it by House Joint Resolution, but they certainly had the power to do it by statute. And then had the issue been tested, the statute been tested, I think we would have found it to be unconstitutional, but it wasn't tested. For some reason, I don't know why, but somebody didn't get out there and say, wait a minute, you can't do away with my gold. You can't prohibit me from making a contract. You can't abrogate my property rights. See, if Congress could abrogate the gold clause, then they could abrogate property rights, and that's a taking, which is prohibited by the Fifth Amendment. What we had here with House Joint Resolution 192 was a takings action by government. They took your gold without just compensation. Hang on a minute. The government didn't take your gold. They enacted a law and they told you that you had to take it down to the bank and turn it in. And you people voluntarily stood in line and took it in. Now, had you kept your gold in your pocket and forced the government to come out, beat your door down, and take it out of your pocket, you'd have had a taking. But when you went down and gave it to the bank, that's not a taking. That's a voluntary abolition of your property right. Abrogation of your property right. You alienated yourselves from your gold in 1933. Children, just like Harry Connick alienated himself from his bread and milk, remember? That's the way we transfer property. And the way the American people transferred their property to the Federal Reserve Bank was to alienate themselves from their gold by going down to their banks and turning them in for $5, $10, and $20 Federal Reserve notes. Talk about ignorant now. But hey, wait a minute. These are the people that voted for Franklin D. Roosevelt. These are sovereign citizens. These are masters who elected their servants who enacted this law. And they were just following the law of their masters. Or was it their servants? Which is it? Is the politician your master or your servant? Huh? What do you think? Children? Master or servant? Well, there's no question that between 1933 and 77, the lessors could not successfully have demanded payment in gold coin from any lessee. But they claimed that the 1917 clause was readopted by the 1990 warranty agreement and became effective pursuant to the 1977 statutory amendment. American Life admits that the 1933 Act would not have prohibited the parties from contracting for a gold clause in 1990, but argues that the terms of the 1917 lease were permanently altered by the operation of the 1933 Act, which had erased the gold clause from the 1917 lease. Ah, wait a minute. If you got a 99-year lease with a gold clause, does an act of Congress abrogate that gold clause provision? Well, we're going to find out that the answer is no, it doesn't. How do you like that? No, it doesn't. Now, for us bottom feeders out here, this is why I tell my students, I say, okay, now I'm not going to change Barack Obama and John McCain. I'm not going to change the banking system or the Federal Reserve, but I'm going to take advantage of all of the above. I'm going to take advantage. I'm pretty sure that the presidential candidates are going to follow along with the same communist program that we've been following for the last 50 years, the last 75 years. I don't think that the presidential candidates are going to abolish the Federal Reserve and reestablish gold. So I'm going to base my business decisions on the belief that we're going to have runaway inflation, then depression, then famine and starvation, coupled with military occupation, defeat in war, and martial law. That's what I'm betting on. And I'm betting on it based upon Deuteronomy chapter 28 and Leviticus chapter 26. God himself says that's what's coming. Well, children, I'm out of time again. We'll have to finish this story next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. So let me remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily worldwide over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.